On the G&M Family Market phone line, the talented journalist Patrick Ruby joining us. Patrick, good afternoon.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. I wanted to have you on to talk about, we've chatted with you a lot about college athletics and why athletes are unlikely to ever get paid the way the NCAA does things, but I wanted to get your thoughts on the decision that came down yesterday with the Supreme Court in the case of Murphy versus the NCAA. Applies to New Jersey, cites 10th Amendment clauses, but most of all, is likely to impact states all around the country.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, you know, without getting into the complicated constitutional law questions here about states versus federal jurisdiction and rights, essentially what this decision does, it paves the way on a state-by-state basis for legalized sports gambling and in different types of forms. The states will have the latitude to decide if and how they want to have legalized sports betting. I think that you'll see, obviously, a lot of states are already, like New Jersey is going to be doing it immediately. That's why they're challenging this. A lot of states have expressed interest in this, much like is the case with lotteries, casinos, things like that. It's a source of revenue for states. It's hard to imagine they won't do it. And it's potentially a pretty large source of revenue. I mean, just in Nevada alone, where we already have legalized sports gambling, it was a $4.9 billion industry last year. So that's not counting all the other billions that are being bet illegally all the time. So, I mean, there's a potential for a lot of money here, both for the state, for the leagues potentially, for the companies that are going to become the, you know, Starbucks or whatever, what have you, of sports gambling. So I think it's pretty likely you're going to see it in a lot of places, if not almost coast to coast.
Did states assume that the court was going to rule in favor of Murphy in this case? Because I read a couple of things yesterday that Massachusetts, for one, and several other states already have bills pending in their state legislatures.
Yeah, you know, I think what happens, there were oral arguments at the Supreme Court late last year, and people that follow that, people who kind of study the law and know how to read those tea leaves, they all felt like, oh, after these arguments, we think the Supreme Court is leaning pretty heavily towards letting this happen. Also, we have a more conservative Supreme Court, a more federalist Supreme Court. It's more like sort of receptive into the idea of states' rights. And the case itself was basically New Jersey challenging an older federal law that basically prohibited sports gambling in most states, grandfathered it in Nevada, and sort of allowed limited sports gambling type stuff in a few other places. So it didn't come as a total surprise. You're right. I think some states were expecting it, and some states are already pretty enthusiastic about adopting various types of gambling.
Let's look at it, first of all, from a consumer perspective, and forgetting that gambling can certainly be addictive. Is this going to be better for people to go through a now legalized operation than, you know, leaning on Vinny, who's going to tell you what the VIG is, but he's going to use a secret code to let you know where to send your money?
Well, I mean, theoretically, it's going to make it a lot easier, more above board, more regulated. Depending on the amount of regulation, depending on how it might be taxed, and depending on, for instance, the pro leagues right now are already talking about getting their cut. So I think they proposed something called a, quote, integrity fee for, you know, this is the added expense it's going to take for us to, you know, police our games and make sure things are on the up and up, which is okay. I doubt they're going to take all the money they might get from these quote unquote integrity fees and do that. But I think they proposed something like a 1%. VIG of their own on this, which is a lot. If you're talking about a multi-billion-dollar industry, look, the NFL is something like a $15 billion a year industry. The NBA, MLB are less. NCAA sports are somewhere in that ballpark. So if you're talking 1%, that's a nice new revenue stream for these leagues who, sure, they might have to hire a few more people to coordinate with the states, coordinate with the sports books, keep an eye on stuff, but it's not going to be a massive new amount of overhead. For the most part, it's going to be a lot of free money for these sports leagues. And that's just, again, if they get to take this cut off the top. Now, they would have to negotiate on a state-by-state basis for this, which could be tricky. I do think you will see the NFL lead the charge. And a lot of our sports leagues want Congress to come in and actually create some sort of more uniform federal regulation for how this is going to work. The Supreme Court decision did not preclude allowing gambling and then having some sort of federal rules to make it more standardized. So we might see that too. It's hard to say right now, but I wouldn't be surprised.
All right, what about that paragon of virtue, the NCAA? How do they respond to this?
Oh, it is interesting. I mean, they're the ones who sort of brought the case against New Jersey. They're the ones who have been saying it's going to, you know, ruin the integrity of sports. But now that that's happened, of course, they're saying their lawyers are going to study it. And meanwhile, yesterday, they also signed a deal with a data services company, essentially, that's going to handle all the NCAA sort of scoring, stats, things like that. And what you'll see from them probably in the pro sports leagues is they'll also be trying to find a way to sell this data to essentially say to sports books, you have to buy this data from us. You have to use our services. Again, a way for them to make money, for all sorts of real-time betting purposes. I mean, one thing you're going to probably see, and you see a lot in Europe already, is the ability, and especially with the advent of technology, it makes it easier, the ability to bet on not just, you know, the point spread, who's going to win or lose or cover, or not just make prop bets ahead of time, but to be betting in real time. What's going to happen on the next play? Is there going to be a sack? Is there going to be a touchdown? Like I said, you see this already in Europe. It's a pretty popular way of doing things, and I'd be really surprised if you don't have that here.
What does this mean for the daily fantasy league, some of which have run into trouble within certain states?
I think it's kind of a potential boon for them in that, like, you're talking about the two main companies who were fighting it out. They already have large sort of mailing, that's an old term, emailing / customer list databases of people who are probably interested in gambling on sports, who've already shown interest in gambling on sports. And I wouldn't be surprised to see both of them sort of reorient and expand their business towards a wider variety of gambling. I mean, look, the fact that the Daily Fantasy stuff in a way was trying to exploit a loophole in the law to allow people to sort of gamble on sports. So now there's not going to be you don't need a loophole anymore. It's going to be legal to do it. So in some ways, if they play their cards right, they've already got customer base. They've already got branding. They might be able to grab some of that land more quickly than upstart companies would be able to.
We're talking with Patrick Ruby here on Downtown. So all of this influx of money to the pro leagues, how does that trickle down to the athletes?
Well, I think you'll see some fights in the upcoming sort of CBA negotiations in the different pro leagues. They're going to want to, I mean, if you're the athlete, look, you're going to say it's our labor on the field that's producing this extra revenue. People are betting on what we're doing. You can't just keep it for yourself, owners. I wouldn't be surprised if the owners try to fight back in ways, like they do with everything, and try to keep as much as they can. But I'm sure as you see the collective bargaining agreements come up in the different leagues that this will be factored in. And I would imagine most likely it'll just be added to the pot of money that the players and the owners share. So both sides will get roughly 50% of it.
And does this complicate things for universities and colleges who apparently couldn't even take the time within the Rice Commission report to talk about compensating athletes?
I mean, I think it could complicate it from a public relations standpoint if you see these schools and conferences of the NCAA somehow figuring out a way to get their own integrity fees, selling their data for gambling purposes. Essentially, if you see them making money off of it, maybe it's they're taking sponsorships from things like DraftKings and other daily fantasy companies or gambling companies, and they're putting those up on, you know, the scoreboard at the arena or things like that. I think that it will make it harder for them to turn around and say, this is all about education, it's not about making money, and therefore we can't pay the athletes that are doing the work.
Patrick, just nuts and bolts, what will this look like in states that write those laws and get them through their state legislatures? Will this be done through standalone businesses? Will it be tied into existing casinos or OTB operations?
That is a great question. And honestly, the answer probably, or at least could be, all of the above. I again, like with most things that involve states making their decisions, you're going to probably see some variety. And some of that will depend on who has power in the various states, what interests have power, you know, in places where you've already got casinos and they've got some legislative power, they've got lobbyists, you could see them pushing successfully for limiting it to sports books that are in casinos or on racetracks. In other places that don't have that, something's going to have to be grown from scratch. It's not going to be an interest group already there, ready, waiting, and able to sort of take the slice of the pie. So I do think you could see a lot of variety. I think that's part of why the leagues and others might want to see Congress get back involved and set some sort of uniform standards. Personally, I think what's going to be really interesting is sort of what the law allows and what happens with this all being, online and electronic, because it's one thing if you still have to go to a sports book or go somewhere in person, like essentially like buying a lottery ticket. It's another thing if you can have an app on your phone that allows you to do all this. And again, allows you to do that real-time betting as you're watching a game on TV. I think if you get to that point, I don't see why it wouldn't get to that point, because there's just so much money to be made doing that. But I think if you get to that point, you'll see the biggest possible explosion in terms of a market for this, because I think a lot of people want to do that.
You mentioned the NFL taking the lead in this, but NBA Commissioner Adam Silver has been pretty upfront about his thoughts that we ought to bring basketball when it comes to wagering into the 21st century as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I say the NFL takes the lead, I mean, I think they'll take the lead in going to Congress now and trying to get some sort of federal standardization going on here. Because, Washington is a place where the NFL is comfortable and they've done a lot of lobbying already. I agree with you. Adam Silver, at least publicly, has been the most out front about this, the most progressive about it. I mean, he's basically made the obvious case, which is people like to do this anyway. They're going to do this. Let's make this legal and let's get our share of the money here, essentially. And let's try to, if it's legal, theoretically, we can also monitor for funny business a little bit better. So the NBA looks really poised to want to take advantage, to try to make some money off of it. The NFL is in the best position to make money from a standpoint. It's already the biggest, most popular league, and gambling is an enormous part of the league's business model. Whether or not it's legal, it's a huge part of what drives interest in the league. There are Nielsen numbers out there. I don't know the exact numbers, but there's something along the lines of people who gamble on pro football watch like twice as many games as people who don't per season. And they watch those games. They really watch those games. They watch them all the way through. So the other knock-on effect here is potentially legalized sports gambling in most of or all of the country, especially if it's very popular and you can do it a lot of different ways, could be a boon for these leagues also in terms of driving up interest, in terms of driving up viewership. A bad Monday night football game that's a blowout but isn't quite hitting the spread, or you're able to still bet on the next play, maybe a lot more people stay tuned in. And if more people are tuned in, that's a higher rating, and that's more you can charge for advertising, and that's more the leagues end up pocketing because they can charge the networks more. So there's knock-on effects here, and they could be very positive for the sports league.
Absolutely. Patrick Ruby, great stuff. Thanks so much for visiting with us this afternoon. We'll continue to follow this. I think we're only at the beginning of this story, but Patrick, we appreciate you checking in.
Thanks for having me.